alternative theory that Ukraine had interfered in the election was false. And although no one in the U.S. government knew of any fact, President Putin said, second, as we all know, during the presidential campaign in the United States, the Ukrainian government adopted a unilateral position in favor of one candidate. More than that, certain oligarchs, certainly with the approval of the political leadership, funded this candidate, or female candidate to be more precise. And if there was ever any doubt about who benefits from this unfounded theory put forward by President Trump and his associates, President
Hello,
Putin made it clear
Cleo,
very recently when he said,
WGXC 90.7
thank God
FM
no one is
Acre.
Accusing us anymore of interfering in U.S. elections. Now they're accusing Ukraine. In the face of clear evidence, not only from intelligence community experts, but from his own national security team, that Russia, not Ukraine, interfered in the 2016 election for the benefit of Donald Trump, President Trump still pressed the Ukrainian government to announce an investigation into this conspiracy theory. And why? Because it would help his own political standing. President Trump even sought to withhold an Oval Office meeting from the president of Ukraine until he fell in line with President Putin's lies, the leader who had actually invaded Ukraine. The second demand that President Trump made of President Zelensky during the July 25th call was to investigate the frontrunner for the Democratic nomination for president in 2020, former Vice President Joe Biden, and his son, Hunter. President Trump stated, the other thing, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the Attorney General would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution. So if you can look into it, it sounds horrible to me. Witnesses unanimously testified that there was no factual support for this claim. Rather, they noted that Vice President Biden was acting in support of an international consensus and official U.S. policy to clean up the Prosecutor General's office in Ukraine. Despite these facts, by the time of the July 25th call, Mr. Giuliani had been publicly advocating for these two investigations for months, while also using back channels to press Ukrainian officials to initiate them in support of his client, Donald Trump. Ambassador Sondland understood Mr. Giuliani's role very clearly. He testified, Mr. Giuliani was expressing the desires of the President of the United States, and we knew these investigations were important to the President. To others, Mr. Giuliani was working at cross purposes with official policy channels toward Ukraine, even as he was working on behalf of President Trump. According to former National Security Advisor Ambassador John Bolton, Mr. Giuliani was a, quote, hand grenade who's going to blow everybody up, unquote. Near the end of the July 25th call, President Zelensky circled back to the pre-cooked message that Ambassador Volker had relayed to President Zelensky's top aide before the call. President Zelensky said, I also wanted to thank you for your invitation to visit the United States, specifically Washington, D.C. On the other hand, I also wanted to assure you that we will be very serious about the case and we will work on the investigation. In other words, on one hand is the White House visit, while on the other hand, he agreed to pursue the investigations. This statement shows that President Zelensky fully understood at the time of the July 25th call the quid pro quo between these investigations and the White House meeting that President Trump required and that Ambassador Sondland had testified so clearly about. Numerous witnesses testified about the importance of a White House meeting with the President of the United States, specifically a meeting in the Oval Office, an official act by President Trump. As David Holmes, senior official in the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine, said, it is important to understand that a White House visit was critical to President Zelensky. President Zelensky needed to show U.S. support at the highest levels in order to demonstrate to Russian President Vladimir Putin that he had U.S. backing as well as to advance his ambitious anti-corruption reform agenda at home. In other words, the White House visit would help Zelensky's anti-corruption reforms. And that support remains critical as President Zelensky meets today with President Putin to try to resolve the conflict in the East. Now, the day after this phone call, President Trump sought to ensure that President Zelensky got the message. On July 26, U.S. officials met with President Zelensky and other Ukrainian officials in Kyiv. And President Zelensky mentioned that President Trump had brought up some, quote, very sensitive issues, unquote. After that meeting, Ambassador Sondland had a private one-on-one meeting with Andrei Yermak, President Zelensky's top aide, during which Ambassador Sondland said that they probably discussed the issue of investigations. At lunch right after that with Mr. Holmes and two other State Department officers, Ambassador Sondland pulled out his cell phone and called President Trump. Somewhat shocked, Mr. Holmes recounted the conversation that followed. I heard Ambassador Sondland greet the president and explain he was calling from Kyiv. I heard President Trump then clarify that Ambassador Sondland was in Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland replied, yes, he was in Ukraine, and went on to state that President Zelensky, quote, loves your ass, unquote. I then heard President Trump ask, so he's going to do the investigation? Ambassador Sondland replied that he is going to do it, adding that President Zelensky will do anything you ask him to do. After the call, Ambassador Sondland told Mr. Holmes that President Trump did not give a bleep about Ukraine and only cares about the big stuff that benefits the president himself, like the Biden investigation that Mr. Giuliani was pushing. To repeat, and this is very important, Ambassador Sondland spoke to President Trump before the July 25th call with President Zelensky and relayed to Ukrainian officials President Trump's requirement of political investigations in exchange for a White House meeting. And during that call, President Trump asked for the favor of these two political investigations immediately after the Ukrainian president brought up U.S. military support for Ukraine, which President Trump had recently suspended or put on hold. And at the end of the call, President Zelensky made a point of acknowledging the link between the investigations that President Trump requested and the White House meeting that President Zelensky desperately wanted. And then the following day, Ambassador Sondland confirmed to President Trump on the telephone in person that the Ukrainians would indeed initiate the investigations discussed on the call, which was the only thing about Ukraine that President Trump cared about. Now, it's very important to understand that this investigation revealed that the July 25th call was neither the start nor the end of President Trump's efforts to use the powers of his office for personal political gain. And you have to look at all of the evidence in context as a whole. Prior to the call, the president had removed the former ambassador, Marie Yovanovitch, to clear the way for his three handpicked agents to spearhead his corrupt agenda in Ukraine: Secretary Perry, Ambassador Sondland, and Ambassador Volker, all of whom attended President Zelensky's inauguration on May 20th. All political appointees, they proved to be more than willing to engage in what Dr. Hill later described as an improper domestic political errand for the president. On April 21st, President Zelensky won the Ukrainian election with 73% of the vote, and he had two primary platforms: to resolve the war in the East with Russia and to root out corruption. That same day, President Trump called to congratulate him on his win. Even though the White House press release following the call stated that President Trump expressed his shared commitment to, quote, root out corruption, unquote, President Trump, in fact, did not mention corruption at all on this call, just like he did not mention corruption on the July 25th call. Shortly after this call, President Trump asked Vice President Mike Pence to attend President Zelensky's inauguration. But on May 13th, President Trump did an about-face and directed Vice President Pence not to attend. An advisor to Vice President Pence testified that the inauguration had not yet been scheduled, and therefore the reason for the abrupt change of plans was not related to any scheduling issues. So what had happened in the 3 weeks between April 21st and May 13th, when Vice President Pence was originally invited and then disinvited or removed from the delegation? A few things. First, on April 25th, Vice President Biden formally announced his bid for the Democratic nomination for president. Then, about a week later, on May 3rd, President Trump spoke with President Putin on the telephone. One senior State Department official testified that the conversation between President Trump and President Putin included a discussion of Ukraine. Third, on May 9th, Mr. Giuliani told the New York Times that he intended to travel to Ukraine on behalf of his client, President Trump, in order to, quote, meddle in an investigation, unquote. But after public backlash and apparent pushback from the Ukrainians, Mr. Giuliani canceled his trip the next day, claiming that President Zelensky was surrounded by enemies of President Trump. At a critical May 23rd meeting in the Oval Office, President Trump said that Ukraine was corrupt and tried to take him down in 2016, the same false narrative pushed by President Putin and Mr. Giuliani. And in order for the White House meeting to occur, President Trump told the delegation they must talk to Rudy to get the visit scheduled. These comments from President Trump were the first of many subsequent indications that, in his mind, corruption equals investigations. In the weeks and months following, Mr. Giuliani relayed to both Ukrainian officials and the government officials that President Trump had designated at the May 23rd meeting to take a lead on Ukraine policy, the directive from President Trump that a White House meeting would not occur until Ukraine announced the two political investigations that President Trump required. And well before the July 25th call, Ambassadors Sondland and Volker also relayed this quid pro quo to the Ukrainians, including to President Zelensky himself. Ambassador Volker conveyed the message directly to President Zelensky at the beginning of July, urging him to reference investigations associated with the Giuliani factor with President Trump. And in meetings at the White House on July 10th, Ambassador Sondland told other U.S. officials and two of President Zelensky's advisors, including Mr. Yermak, that he had an agreement with Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney that the White House visit would be scheduled if Ukraine announced the investigations. One witness testified that during the second of the meetings, Ambassador Sondland began to review what the deliverable would be in order to get the meeting, referring to an investigation of the Bidens. The witness told the committee that the request was explicit, there was no ambiguity. And then Ambassador Sondland also mentioned Burisma, a major Ukrainian energy company that Hunter Biden sat on the board of. To the witnesses that testified before the committee, the references to Burisma was shorthand for an investigation into the Bidens. Ambassador Bolton, as well as his staff members, objected to this meeting for investigations trade. And Ambassador Bolton told Dr. Hill, "You go and tell Eisenberg, John Eisenberg, the legal advisor for the National Security Council, that I am not part of whatever drug deal Sondland and Mulvaney are cooking up on this. And you go ahead and tell him what you've heard and what I've said." Yet this was not a rogue operation by Mr. Giuliani and Ambassador Sondland and Volker. As Ambassador Sondland testified, everyone was in the loop, including Mr. Mulvaney, Secretary Pompeo, Secretary Perry, and their top advisors. On July 19th, Ambassador Sondland emailed Mr. Mulvaney, Secretary Perry, Secretary Pompeo, and others after speaking with President Zelensky. The subject was, "I talked to Zelensky just now." And Ambassador Sondland wrote, "He is prepared to receive POTUS's call," POTUS is the President of the United States, "will assure him that he intends to run a fully transparent investigation and will," quote, "turn over every stone," unquote. Both Secretary Perry and Chief of Staff Mulvaney quickly responded to the email, noting that given that conversation, a date would soon be set to schedule the White House telephone call. The evidence also unambiguously shows that the Ukrainians understood this quid pro quo and had serious reservations, particularly because President Zelensky had won the election on an anti-corruption platform. In fact, a few days before the July 25th call, Ambassador William Taylor, the acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine and the former permanent ambassador to Ukraine, texted Ambassador Sondland and Volker. Or rather, he stated in his testimony, "On July 20th, I had a phone conversation with Mr. Danilyuk, during which he conveyed to me that President Zelensky did not want to be used as a pawn in a U.S. re-election campaign." But President Trump's pressure campaign on President Zelensky did not relent. And just 4 days later, President Zelensky received that message via Kurt Volker that he needed to convince President Trump that he would do the investigations in order to get that White House meeting. And as I have described, President Zelensky tried to do exactly that on the July 25th call with President Trump. In the weeks following the July 25th call, President Zelensky heeded President Trump's request, sending his top aide, Mr. Yermak, to Madrid to meet with Mr. Giuliani. In coordination with Mr. Giuliani, President and the President Trump's handpicked representatives, they continued this pressure campaign to secure a public announcement of the investigations. Now, according to Ambassador Sondland, and this is very important, President Trump did not require that Ukraine actually conduct the investigations as a prerequisite for the White House meeting. Instead, the Ukrainian government needed only to publicly announce the investigations. It is clear that the goal was not the investigations themselves, or not any corruption that those investigations might have entailed, but the political benefit that President Trump would enjoy from an announcement of investigations into his 2020 political rival and against a unanimous assessment that showed that he received foreign support in the 2016 election. And for that reason, the facts didn't actually matter to President Trump, because he only cared about the personal and political benefit from the announcement of the investigation. Over the next couple of weeks, Ambassador Sondland and Volker worked with President Trump's aide, Mr. Yermak, to draft a statement for President Zelensky to issue. When the aide proposed a statement that did not include specific references to the investigations that President Trump wanted, the Burisma and Biden investigation and the 2016 election investigation, Mr. Giuliani relayed that that would not be good enough to get a White House meeting. And here you can see a comparison on the left of the original statement drafted by Mr. Yermak, the top aide to President Zelensky, and on the right, a revised statement with Mr. Giuliani's requirements. And it says, "We intend to initiate and complete a transparent and unbiased investigation of all available facts and episodes." And here's the critical difference, including those involving Burisma and the 2016 U.S. elections, which in turn will prevent the recurrence of this problem in the future. The only difference in the statement that Giuliani required and the statement that the Ukrainians had drafted was this reference to the two investigations that President Trump wanted and told President Zelensky about on the July 25th call. Now, ultimately, President Zelensky's administration temporarily shelved this announcement, though efforts to press Ukraine would remain ongoing. By mid-August, Ukraine did not make a public announcement of the investigations that President Trump required, and as a result, no White House meeting was scheduled. But by this time, the president was pushing on another pressure point to coerce Ukraine to announce the investigations: the hold on the vital military assistance that the president had put in place for more than a month, still without any explanation to any of the policy experts. Our investigation revealed that a number of Ukrainian officials had made quiet inquiries to various U.S. officials about the aid as early as July 25th, the day of the phone call. Inquiries by Ukrainian officials continued in the weeks that followed until the hold was revealed at the end of August. But this is important. It was important for the Ukrainian officials to keep it quiet, because if it became public, then Russia would know that the U.S. support for Ukraine might be on ice. So by the end of that month, the evidence revealed several facts. One, The president demanded that Ukraine publicly announce two politically motivated investigations to benefit his reelection. Two, a coveted White House meeting was expressly conditioned on Ukraine announcing those investigations. Three, President Trump had placed a hold on vital military assistance to Ukraine without any explanation, and notwithstanding the uniform support for that assistance from the relevant federal agencies and Congress. Ambassador Taylor testified that this quid pro quo between the investigations President Trump wanted and the security assistance that President Trump needed was crazy. And he told Ambassador Sondland, "As I said on the phone, I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign." Now, in an effort to move the White House meeting and the military aid along, Ambassador Sondland wrote an email to Secretary Pompeo on August 22nd. He wrote, "Mike, should we block time in Warsaw for a short pull-aside for POTUS to meet Zelensky? I would ask Zelensky to look him in the eye and tell him that once Ukraine's new justice folks are in place, parentheses, mid-September, Z, President Zelensky, should be able to move forward publicly and with confidence on those issues of importance to POTUS and to the U.S. Hopefully, that will break the logjam." Ambassador Sondland testified that this was a reference to the political investigations that President Trump discussed on the July 25th call, which Secretary Pompeo ultimately admitted to that he listened to in real time. Ambassador Sondland hoped that this would help lift the logjam, which he meant the hold on critical security assistance to Ukraine and the White House meeting. And what was Secretary Pompeo's response 3 minutes later? Yes. After the hold on military assistance became public on August 28th, senior Ukrainian officials expressed grave concern. Deeply worried, of course, about the practical impact on their efforts to fight Russian aggression, but also, and this goes back to why it remained confidential, also about the public message that it sent to the Russian government. On September 1st, at a pre-briefing with Vice President Pence before he met with President Zelensky, Ambassador Sondland raised the issue of the hold on security assistance. He said, "I mentioned to Vice President Pence before the meetings with the Ukrainians that I had concerns of that the delay in aid had become tied to the issue of investigations." Vice President Pence simply nodded in response, expressing neither surprise nor dismay at the linkage between the two. And following Vice President Pence's meeting with President Zelensky, Ambassador Sondland went over to Mr. Yermak again, President Zelensky's top aide, and pulled him aside to explain that the hold on security assistance was also now conditioned on the public announcement of the Burisma Biden and the 2016 election interference investigations. Ambassador Sondland then explained to Ambassador Taylor that he had previously made a mistake in telling Ukrainian officials that only the White House meeting was conditioned on a public announcement of the political investigations beneficial to President Trump. In truth, everything, the White House meeting and the vital security assistance to Ukraine, was now conditioned on the public announcement. President Trump wanted President Zelensky in a public box. A private commitment was not good enough. Nearly 1 week later, on September 7th, the hold remained, and President Trump and Ambassador Sondland spoke on the phone. The president immediately told Ambassador Sondland that there was no quid pro quo, but, and this is very important, President Zelensky would still be required to announce the investigations in order for the hold on security assistance to be lifted, and he should want to do it. In effect, this is the equivalent of saying there is no quid pro quo, know this for that, before then demanding precisely that quid pro quo. And immediately after this phone call with President Trump, this was the precise message that Ambassador Sondland passed directly to President Zelensky. According to Ambassador Taylor, Ambassador Sondland also said that he had talked to President Zelensky and Mr. Yermak and had told them that although this was not a quid pro quo, if President Zelensky did not clear things up in public, we would be at a stalemate. and I understood a stalemate to mean that Ukraine would not receive the much-needed military assistance. Needing the military assistance and hoping for the White House meeting, President Zelensky finally relented to President Trump's pressure campaign, and arrangements were soon made for the Ukrainian president to make a statement during an interview on CNN where he would make a public announcement of the two investigations that President Trump wanted. In order for President Zelensky to secure the White House meeting and for Ukraine to get that much-needed military assistance. And although there is no doubt that President Trump had ordered the military aid held up until the Ukrainians committed to the investigations, on October 17th, Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney confirmed in public that there was such a quid pro quo. Let's watch what he said.
Those were the driving factors. Did he also mention to me in the past the corruption related to the DNC server? Absolutely. No question about that. But that's it. And that's why we held up the money. Now, there was a report.
So the demand for an investigation into the Democrats was part of the reason that to withhold funding to Ukraine.
The look back to what happened in 2016 certainly was part of the thing that he was worried about in corruption with that nation. And that is absolutely appropriate.
There you have it. By early September, the president's scheme was unraveling. On September 9th, the Intelligence Oversight and Foreign Affairs Committees announced an investigation into President Trump and Mr. Giuliani's efforts in Ukraine. And later that same day, the Intelligence Committee learned that a whistleblower had filed a complaint nearly a month earlier related to some unknown issue, but which the president and the White House knew was related to Ukraine and had been circulating among them for some time. And then 2 days later, on September 11th, in the face of growing public and congressional scrutiny, President Trump lifted the hold on security assistance to Ukraine. As with the implementation of the hold, no reason was provided. Put simply, President Trump got caught, so he released the aid. But even since this investigation began, the president has demonstrated no contrition or acknowledgement that his demand for a foreign country to interfere in our election is wrong. In fact, he has repeatedly called on Ukraine to investigate Vice President Biden, his rival. These and other actions by the president and his associates demonstrate that his determination to solicit foreign interference in our election continues today. It did not end with Russia's support for Trump in 2016, which President Trump invited by asking for his opponent to be hacked by Russia, and it did not end when his Ukrainian scheme was exposed in September of this year. President Trump also engaged, once this investigation began, in an unprecedented effort to obstruct the inquiry, and I look forward to answering your questions about that unprecedented obstruction. But in conclusion, I want to say that the Intelligence Committee has produced to you a nearly 300-page report. And I am grateful that you have offered me the opportunity today to walk you through some of the evidence underlying it. Admittedly, it is a lot to digest. But let me just say this. The president's scheme is actually quite simple, and the facts are not seriously in dispute. It can be boiled down to four key takeaways. First, that President Trump directed a scheme to pressure Ukraine into opening two investigations that would benefit his 2020 re-election campaign and not the U.S. national interest. Second, President Trump used his official office and the official tools of U.S. foreign policy, the withholding of an Oval Office meeting and $391 million in security assistance to pressure Ukraine into meeting his demands. Third, everyone was in the loop, his chief of staff, the Secretary of State, and Vice President. And fourth, despite the public discovery of this scheme, which prompted the president to release the aid, he has not given up. He and his agents continue to solicit Ukrainian interference in our election, causing an imminent threat to our elections and our national security. Members of the committee, President Trump's
regular order, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen's time has elapsed. Point of order.
Gentlemen's time has expired. Mr. Deitch.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Gentleman will state his motion.
I move the committee shall be in recess, subject to the call of the chair. I move to
motion,
table.
Move to the motion.
Move to table the motion.
Is a privileged motion. It is not debatable. All those in favor of the committee recess.
I seek a recorded vote.
The chair will say aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. No.
No.
The ayes have it. The committee roll call. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Nadler?
Aye.
Mr. Nadler votes aye. Ms. Lofgren?
Aye.
Ms. Lofgren votes aye. Ms. Jackson-Lee?
Aye.
Ms. Jackson-Lee votes aye. Mr. Cohen?
Aye.
Mr. Cohen votes aye. Mr. Johnson of Georgia?
Aye.
Mr. Johnson of Georgia votes aye. Mr. Deutsch?
Aye.
Mr. Deutsch votes aye. Ms. Bass?
Aye.
Ms. Bass votes aye. Mr. Richmond?
Aye.
Mr. Richmond votes aye. Mr. Jeffries?
Aye.
Mr. Jeffries votes aye. Mr. Cicilline?
Aye.
Mr. Cicilline votes aye. Mr. Swalwell?
Aye.
Mr. Swalwell votes aye. Mr. Liu?
Aye.
Mr. Liu votes aye. Mr. Raskin?
Aye.
Mr. Raskin votes aye. Ms. Jayapal?
Aye.
Ms. Jayapal votes aye. Ms. Demings?
Aye.
Ms. Demings votes aye. Mr. Correa?
Aye.
Mr. Correa votes aye. Ms. Scanlon?
Aye.
Ms. Scanlon votes aye. Ms. Garcia?
Aye.
Ms. Garcia votes aye. Mr. Neguse?
Aye.
Mr. Neguse votes aye. Ms. McBath?
Aye.
Ms. McBath votes aye. Mr. Stanton?
Aye.
Mr. Stanton votes aye. Ms. Dean?
Aye.
Ms. Dean votes aye. Ms. McCarsel-Powell?
Aye.
Ms. McCarsel-Powell votes aye. Ms. Escobar?
Aye.
Ms. Escobar votes aye. Mr. Collins? Mr. Collins votes no. Mr. Sensenbrenner? Mr. Shabbat? Oh, Mr. Sensenbrenner votes no. Mr. Shabbat? Mr. Shabbat votes no. Mr. Gohmert? Mr. Gohmert votes no. Mr. Jordan? Mr. Jordan votes no. Mr. Buck? Mr. Radcliffe?
No.
Mr. Radcliffe votes no. Ms. Roby?
No.
Ms. Roby votes no. Mr. Gates?
No, this is so they can have a press conference before Mr. Castor gets the chance to offer rebuttal. Nobody asked for this break.
The gentleman will suspend. The roll call is in progress.
Mr. Johnson of Louisiana?
No.
Mr. Johnson of Louisiana votes no. Mr. Biggs?
No.
Mr. Biggs votes no. Mr. McClintock?
No.
Mr. McClintock votes no. Ms. Lesko? Ms. Lesko votes no. Mr. Reschenthaler?
No.
Mr. Reschenthaler votes no. Mr. Klein?
No.
Mr. Klein votes no. Mr. Armstrong?
No.
Mr. Armstrong votes no. Mr. Stubbe? Mr. Stubbe votes no.
Has everyone voted the wishes to vote? The clerk will report.
Mr. Chairman, there are 24 ayes and 16 noes.
The motion to recess at the call of the chair is
how long
adopted.
Do we anticipate the recess? How long is the recess?
Well, the gentleman will suspend.
I'd just like to know how long.
The gentleman will suspend.
It's until they're done with their press conference.
The gentleman will suspend. The committee will stand in recess for 15 minutes. I will announce also that we've been in session about 2.5 hours. After the conclusion of the testimony, the cross-exams will be about another 2.5 hours. We'll probably stand in recess then before the commencement of the 5-minute round of questioning. I would ask that people remain in their seats while the two witnesses are given an opportunity to leave. I would remind people in the audience that if they leave, they may not have their seats back when we reconvene. The committee will stand in recess and will reconvene in 15 minutes.
Thank you. From the second half of Tortoise's 1998 TNT record, we heard from the top the suspension bridge at Iguazu, four-day interval, and in Sarah, Mencken, Christ, and Beethoven, there were men and women. That's almost all the music we have time for today. Let's go out with the last track, called Everglade, on Tortoise's TNT record. This has been a special edition of the Morning Sampler Show with Brendan Donegan. Thank you for listening and have a great week. I'll see you back next Monday at 11 a.m. at 90.7 FM and online at wgxc.org/listen. All on listener-supported radio for open ears. WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, New York.